If you've ever embarked on a do-it-yourself project, you may have come across Tim Anderson.
My sister, who is a very wise woman, gave me some simple rules to live by. Don't touch anything and don't do anything. Don't do anything. This is a hacksaw. Revelation! Today we're going to know how to make some noise-isolating headphones better than anything you can buy, and it'll only cost you $20. Today we're going to make a wind-powered skateboard!
Anderson can give you step-by-step instructions for making all sorts of stuff. You'll never have to wonder how to turn a shopping cart into a chair or drapes into a hammock. Over the years, Anderson's become something of a DIY legend. John Kalish has the story of how he learned his trade.
There's a sprawling industrial park on the waterfront in Alameda that once was a naval air base. What had been the base's air traffic control tower was taken over by a gaggle of MIT engineers working on a variety of high-tech projects. One is an airborne wind turbine being developed by a company called Makani Power. Tim Anderson refers to himself as Makani's pro bono night watchman. He feels strongly America needs to get off petroleum, and he has other ideas about other changes the country should make.
The two big things, of course, that are wrong with this country are not enough bamboo and not enough monkeys.
Not enough monkeys?
Yeah, I mean, the United States just does not have enough monkeys. Don't you think it would be better if we had more monkeys running around?
Tim Anderson is tall, young-looking, and in his late 40s. Spent a week with a guy wandering around the Bay Area's DIY underground. And during that time, he appeared to be wearing the same pair of brown duck shorts every day. Turned out he has five pair of them. One of the sleeves of his favorite red shirt is long and the other is short, a casualty of welding sparks and battery acid. Outside, he wears a dark brown felt sombrero with white decorative embroidery that is fast unraveling. Anderson keeps a pair of clogs handy, but mostly he goes barefoot.
I fell in a manhole, an open manhole in Guatemala a few years ago, and I hurt my knee. And ever since then, my knee periodically hurts. And probably it hurts less when I'm barefoot, especially whenever I hurt my feet. I think it changes how I walk, and then my knee stops hurting. So probably I've just been classically conditioned by a funky knee to go barefoot, just because my knee hurts less, you know?
Sure. Tim Anderson was raised by educators. His father was a college professor, and his mother, Mary Anderson, started five Montessori schools in Minnesota. She admits Tim was not an ordinary kid.
He was reading excessively, and at one point in his young life, we had to limit him to 3 hours a day of reading. But he would just read anything, history, biography, radio technology. He just seemed to be interested in everything.
Mary Anderson remembers her son at the age of five devouring one volume of his children's encyclopedia. It was filled with things for kids to make.
I remember he wanted to make paper out of cloth. And all I knew about it was that he had asked for rags. That didn't sound very dangerous, and I didn't question him. But later, I found out that my blender was ruined. He had tried to shred up the rags, tear them up, cut them up as well as he could, and then he had put them in the blender with whatever water and vinegar, I don't know what his recipe in the book called for, and then had blended this and spread it out on cookie sheets to dry. And he actually made a type of paper.
Tim's education was pretty much like that. He spent part of what should have been his junior high school years apprenticing with a blacksmith in Japan.
Missed 2 years of school, but it was okay because my mom wrote me a note.
This is what Tim Anderson does. He learns by doing and making. In high school, he made a surfboard out of soft foam for riding river rapids in Minnesota. To surf, of course, you need a wetsuit, so Anderson made one out of scraps of neoprene he bought from a nearby factory. After high school, he got a job that was, well, unconventional.
I was a cowbrow repairman.
Apparently, cows sometimes wear a mesh bra-like device to guard against mastitis.
And I put this on my resume, which is probably one of the things that kept me from ever getting a job with my resume. It's like, well, this one's a cow bra repairman. How fortunate. You know, our cow bra division definitely needs some new blood.
Anderson went to college but says he slept a lot in class. He studied electrical engineering and computer science, but came away with a degree in neither. After college, he wandered, which included a motorcycle sojourn in Europe. Eventually, he ended up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where his sister was getting a graduate degree at Harvard. Yeah, that sister.
Don't touch anything and don't do anything!
While visiting his sister in Cambridge, Anderson started hanging out at MIT, which was somewhat logical for a guy who was planning to make a robot that would paint works of art.
You can just walk in and use most things. The library's open. A lot of the shops are open, especially if you get to know the people that work there and the machinists. And if you look like you know what you're doing, nobody asks any questions.
Eric Wilhelm is an MIT-educated engineer whose friendship with Anderson dates back to those days.
It's a great place to go and build things and use tools and meet people.
Pretty soon, Anderson was hanging out at a place known as MITRES, the MIT Electronic Research Society. MITRES was a hackerspace before the term existed.
You walk in and there's things hanging from the ceiling. There's tools everywhere. There's bicycles hanging and all sorts of contraptions. As an engineer, you kind of look around and you think, okay, this is my place.
At MITRES, Anderson worked on his painting robot, which he called Van Gogo.
This is Van Gogo, a robot which is painting. It just happens that paintings are made by brush motions. And hopefully it will allow me to effortlessly produce a vast quantity of work. I was begging junk out of the halls, and the guy who ran the LMP, Lab for Manufacturing and Productivity Machine Shop, happened to be looking for an electronics guy, and I showed him my painting robot. I was doing computer motor control of DC brush motors, and that's what they needed for their machine, and so they offered me a job.
Their machine turned out to be a 3D printer. Anderson was hired as an electrical engineer at the MIT lab in 1992. It looks a lot better on his resume than cow bra repairman. Saul Griffith was working on his doctorate at MIT during Anderson's Cambridge years.
I met him at a party one night. All I remember is meeting this odd guy. There were myths and rumors about he slept in a stairwell and only ate free food and could make anything with baling wire and rubber bands. And all of those myths are basically true.
How long were you sleeping at MIT? A
few years. The MIT doesn't care where you sleep. They care if you're causing problems. Nobody likes problems. But it's a very accepting place. You know, if you're doing something that you care about and you want to sleep right next to it, people like that. They understand that people need to sleep, especially if they're working really hard on something they care about.
You're listening to the story of Tim Anderson, a Bay Area do-it-yourself project superstar. And if you want to tell us what you've built in your garage, you can share it on our Facebook page. We're KLW News. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan, and now back to Tim Anderson's story.
MIT's 3D printing technology ended up being licensed by a couple of high-tech entrepreneurs who named their startup Z Corporation.
It's the Z Printer 650 from Z Corporation. Full-color 3D printing for almost anything you can imagine.
Before long, Tim Anderson was working at Z Corporation. CEO Marina Hatsopoulos says Anderson was instrumental in building the prototype 3D printer. Hatsopoulos noticed that even though Anderson rented a room to live in, he often slept at the Z Corporation offices.
I thought he was crazy. I mean, I just thought he was such a nut. And the more I learned about him, the more I realized it's not for show. It's like who he is. When we started, I actually thought he just needed some structure in his life and that he could turn into a normal person. That was just all wrong. I mean, he's not meant to be a corporate guy. And so it took me a couple years to really appreciate how he is and that he's just very eccentric. And that's what makes him so unique.
In 2005, the Z Corporation was acquired for millions of dollars, and Anderson came into some big money.
He did well. He did very well.
These days, Anderson lives in the Bay Area, but even with his financial windfall, he's still not very into nesting. He doesn't seem to put much value on where he sleeps.
I've spent years living in vehicles, and I have no trouble sleeping, so I don't really care that much where I sleep. You know, when I sleep, I close my eyes. It doesn't matter that much where I am. I like living in vehicles. It's really convenient. Especially in the winter, you don't have to worry about food spoiling. You know, the truck is your refrigerator.
Sometimes Anderson stays with a girlfriend. Sometimes he stays in a small yurt he built from a discarded futon frame on a vacant lot he owns in Berkeley. And sometimes he rests his weary bones in his workroom at the control tower, which comes rent-free with his unpaid night watchman gig. It's a 10 by 15 foot room with cement walls. Outside his window are palm trees and the Alameda waterfront. Against one wall is a jukebox-sized piece of electronic equipment with the words Z Corporation on it.
That's one of our machines right there. The machines are pretty popular. All the car companies have them, and all the shoe companies have them, and a lot of colleges have them.
And does this thing work?
Yeah.
On a shelf above this 3D printer worth tens of thousands of dollars are primitive steel tools. Elsewhere in the workroom are power tools, a sewing machine, computers, a hide from a wild pig, and Anderson's old painting robot, Van Gogh. Hanging out with him here and asking about all this stuff is like show and tell on acid. Tim Anderson has gained almost mythic stature in the DIY world for repurposing stuff found in the waste stream. He has a manual paper shredder, which is really just the plastic teeth from a broken electric shredder he connected to a hand crank.
There, I'm going to start shredding some secret documents here. There you go. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I don't know why everyone doesn't have one of these things. You know, it just makes me want to shred everything. And when you've shredded enough stuff, you can put them in a bag. They make a pretty nice mattress. It would also work for making pasta.
And he has two full shipping containers outside the control tower full of this stuff. Here's his MIT buddy Saul Griffith, who won a MacArthur Genius Grant.
Tim has a peculiar pack rat personality, and no matter what you need on any given day, he almost certainly doesn't have it, but he has something frustratingly close to what you want that he will lend you that will almost meet your needs.
Over here is the sailing canoe that I tried to sail to Cuba a few years ago, and the boat had some serious problems. It was basically a torture chamber.
Anderson has another sailboat docked at a marina in the nearby town of Emeryville. One spring night, he takes 20 passengers out for a margarita-fueled sail on San Francisco Bay.
All right. Tacking.
We're going to tack, so get ready. Okay, go, 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 go. Everyone over.
Anderson refers to this 30-foot-long vessel as his free yacht because he came into it for a song when someone fell behind in payments to the marina. In Tim Anderson's universe, free is not only good, it's preferable.
Freedom. No king. There's no king here. The land animals don't care what you do out here.
Of course, the land animals do care about what you do back on terra firma. Which is why Tim Anderson is making an effort to keep up with the grass on his vacant lot in Berkeley. He uses an old scythe that has been in his family for generations.
Yeah, this thing does a great job.
The next time I see him working on the landscaping here, he's using an electric weed whacker hooked up to a battery. Eventually, he'll erect a glass and steel prefab house on this lot. Anderson got it for free from an architectural firm in Boston. In the meantime, He can crash in his yurt, which looks out on a small plastic pool with mosquito-eating fish and some citrus trees planted in self-watering containers using an ancient Aztec growing technique.
This is 6,000 square feet. 4,000 square feet is enough to grow all the food for one person, all the calories you need, and there are people around here who do that.
We are in Berkeley, after all, where the biodiesel filling station sells supplies for beekeepers and chicken farmers.
One reason I'm living small is to acquire the skills to understand how people can live in a way they can feel good about. And I'm starting to feel like I know the answer, like don't put the poop in the pipe. You know, where does the poop go? Compost it, right? Where do you want to grow your food? Grow it right next to you, right?
Anderson describes his plans as build house, grow food, get off petroleum. But his timetable for putting up the prefab house keeps shifting. At some point in the week I followed Anderson around his DIY universe in the East Bay, he introduced me to his friend Boris Fain, a computational physicist. Fain thinks highly of Anderson, but recognizes that his friend's unconventional ways can rub some people the wrong way.
Anyone who likes order or has any kind of anal side to them cannot handle him in any kind of way. You know, he's very disorganized, and he's got a big flake factor in him, you know, not filling out forms, not being able to pay parking tickets. He didn't. Now he does, but he didn't pay parking tickets or do stuff like that. And then, of course, there was a really good reason why authority might, you know, I don't trust authority. I don't like, it's inhibiting creativity, whatever. But really, you know, you're just not the kind of guy who fills out forms.
Tim is just a pathological maker of things.
Again, Saul Griffith.
I think what people should understand about Tim is he has been a fabulous mentor, not to tens, but to hundreds of engineers and nerds.
He's like a machinist that has already built everything you've ever needed to build, and you just need to remind him how he did it the last time.
That's Eric Wilhelm, another MIT pal who now runs the DIY website Instructables.com. Filmmaker Isaiah Saxon doesn't go all the way back to the MIT days, but he's a friend too.
Tim is so brilliant that it's hard to keep up sometimes. He combines ultimate technological capability with the engineer's ethic to do more with less. Tim is focused on doing more with less and makes a personal game out of it and delights in doing more with less.
So what becomes of this intensely human and yet intensely mechanical guy named Tim Anderson? He figures he has enough documented DIY projects to fill a few books, and he has another publishing idea he thinks could be very lucrative.
So my plan to make a whole lot of money is I'm going to write a book about how you don't have to make money, how you can just live really cheap and not make any money, and then that's going to be a big seller.
In Alameda, I'm John Kalish.
You can find more information about Tim Anderson's projects at our website. We're klw.org. That's also where you can hear all of our stories and subscribe to our podcast.
What's he building in there? What the hell is he building in there?